entertainment.ie.
I love the way you say film.
Hello and welcome back to the Film Show. I'm your host, Owen Ronayne. Joined with me is Brian Lloyd and Dee Malumbi. This is for the website entertainment.ie, by the way.
Okay, so that's mention one. We've been told, we got notes on last week's show, and we were told to mention the name of our website more.
Yes.
I'm going to start keeping an account here.
Okay.
So how many times are we going to...
Entertainment.ie.
Let's set ourselves a goal. Will we say six times?
Six times.
Okay. Did Owen's there count? He just hobbled it under his breath. Okay,
so that's two.
Okay, I'm keeping a count. But we have to do it seamlessly.
Yes.
Okay.
A good whatchamacallit?
Entertainment.ie.
No, not just... Okay, I'm counting.
Stop saying the name of our website, entertainment.ie, Owen.
Yes! We got there!
We're on four and it's not even 2 minutes into the show.
All right, movie news.
Movie news.
Up first, we've got a potential John Wick spin-off. I can see he's both tingling as soon as...
love our John Wick news. Yay!
But let me tell you, I am too missing to... Listen, I got a steaming hot... I'm primed and ready to rock. Do you want to give the news
first? So before going in, what? You said you had a hot take on this. All right, you give us the synopsis on the news.
Okay, so the synopsis on the news is that they're basically going to do a female-centric John Wick spin-off. It's going to be
that is not Atomic Blonde.
That is not Atomic Blonde.
Yes. Same plot.
It's called Ballerina. The assumption, and we were talking about this off air, D, is that in the third John Wick movie, which you haven't seen, by the way.
I know.
That's mad.
I've never seen you more upset. No, I do really want to see it.
I had no excuse.
Do you know what it was? I think it was that you were all so mad about it that I got the gist.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not just saying, I'm not being like typically, oh, it's so bad. No, it's very good.
Do you have a ranking for them?
Oh, yeah.
Is it 1, 2, 3, or 1, 3, 2?
I would go 1, 3, 2, yeah.
I got 1, 2, 3.
Would you?
Yeah. Mm. I would.
Because I preferred 1 a lot to 2. I wasn't expecting to
really?
Be. I thought 2 was quite good.
Mm. 2 was very good.
2 was very, very good.
The only thing that I didn't like was the whole suicide in the bathtub thing. Thought that, was,
that was
a bit much.
Yeah, a bit odd.
Bit much.
Yeah.
Whereas 3, like, I don't know, maybe I need to see it again. I feel like it wasn't as iconic. Like, it didn't have as much kind of stuff that I could grab onto that was memorable and iconic.
The motorcycle samurais, the fight in the glass house, Halle Berry.
Yeah.
Come on.
I did like the dog scene.
The dog
that
scenes
was fabulous.
Were very cool.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Look, they're all great.
Oh, no,
I'm just ranking them according to preference.
Yeah, fair enough.
No, fair. So, the director of this spin-off. Oh, yeah, yeah. So why is it called Ballerina? It's called Ballerina because in the third John Wick movie, there's a scene in it when he goes through this theater company. And there's ballerinas there and they have like tattoos and you're kind of basically getting the feeling that this was the academy where John Wick learned his trade to be an assassin.
No way.
Yeah.
Again, this is all kind of linked to the Continental, which is like the secret society of assassins. You know, that's kind of been expanding out and out with every movie.
Yes.
And the idea was that they're all fronting as ballerinas, but they're all truly assassins.
Yes.
And has every other assassin in the previous movies been part of this ballerina?
It's just like it was introduced in the third one. Like,
and the director of it, and her name is actually the director, which is amazing, is played by Angelica Houston.
Yes. Oh,
so it's
fantastic.
so cool to see her make a big screen comeback. And she was just so cool with that role.
So cool.
She was just so like chill and just had this aura of fabulous.
I rewatched The Addams Family last weekend.
Because
there's
an animated remake coming out this month.
So I hear.
Yeah.
Who was cast in it?
There's Charlize Theron and
Oscar Isaac.
Gomez. That's right.
Yeah,
that's which
good.
Is amazing.
Is that, like, do you know what the thing about that is that fucking kills me about this? If they made a live action version of.
They'd all work.
They would all fucking work.
They totally would.
Come on. Come fucking. Like, I have the most. I love. Addams Family. I love Addams Family.
I forgot how much remembered the sequel a whole lot more than the
so
original. Addams Family Values.
I think it's because it was shown on TV more.
This is going to loop us into the big movie, which deserves a full chat maybe later in this episode. But Gomez carries that first film as well.
100%.
He's totally does.
I always thought it was such an ensemble thing, and Angelica Houston's phenomenal in it. But he's all the grandiose bravado.
Yeah, he's so good at it.
Raul, I don't know, Julia. Though, but there are so many good guys in it. You know, there's Felix as well.
Felix?
Oh, sorry, not Felix. What do you call
Fester.
Him?
Christopher.
Christopher Lloyd. Lloyd.
Yeah.
He's so good as well. And then you've got Christina Ricci as Wednesday.
She's really young in the first
one. Very,
she's so young.
So young.
Who was I talking? I was talking about this to my flatmate, and he was saying how he had a massive crush on her.
I think everybody
from
did.
The second one. Yeah. And then we didn't realize in the first one she's like seven or something.
Yeah. I think everybody.
There must have been a couple of years between them.
Yeah, there was like about, I think, 5 or 6 years. We've totally gone off John Wick altogether.
Adam's Family.
You were going to give your hot,
my hot take.
Yeah.
Right. So the director of this spin-off is Len Wiseman. And he did...
Underworld.
And he also did Die Hard...
Live Free or Die Hard.
Die Hard 4.0.
Is that 5? Oh, no.
No, Die Hard 4. John Moore did Die Hard 5. That was... A Good Day to Die.
Wait, was 4 the one with the like firewall?
Yes.
Yeah.
That one. The shit one.
Yeah. I think it was, wasn't it Mary Elizabeth Winstead was his
correct.
Daughter or something?
Yeah. Correct. And Len
What's the name of that guy from all those
Timothy
like...
Timothy Olyphant.
No, he was brilliant in it, but who is the like nerdy guy who's in American Pie and all that stuff?
Is he
even in American Pie? I don't know
no,
where I
know
him.
He's not in American Pie. He looks like Jason Schwartzman, but he's not Jason Schwartzman.
I can picture him getting hit in the head with like a skateboard.
Yeah, and he was in, I think he was in Dodgeball as well.
That's exactly it.
I don't know his name though.
All right, carry on. It's a film bug, guys.
Yeah. And he also did Total Recall, the crap. My point is, Len Wiseman is a fucking hack of a director.
Right.
And like he is
but
not
Underworld.
Fuck that.
I liked Underworld.
You have this weird thing with like Resident Evil and Underworld. What is that? I don't know. But
it's very specific. You know they're showing Blade in the IFI, by the way. Or in the Lighthouse. Sorry.
Yes, 35mm. I saw
that. I'll check that out.
Halloween night,
sure.
I think. Yeah. Or around that Halloween week anyway.
Yeah, I definitely want to check that out. But
sorry, we're just
I'm just totally blanking. But yeah, no. So my point, Len Wiseman, fucking hack director, could have got a fucking class action director, female action director to do it. They just didn't bother their arse. Like if it's meant to be a female centric spin-off, you would think, okay, let's actually get a fucking female action director in
and
give it a go. Like.
And are the choreographers coming back for it?
Well, I presume so. But like, I mean, it's just. Whether it's a fucking, whether it is or not, whether it is or not the same choreographer, it doesn't matter. It's supposed to be a female-centric action movie. You think they just fucking get it.
What's your hot take? It's going to be terrible.
I think it's going to be
shit. I
assume
it's because of Kate Beckinsale-led Underworld.
That's what
I know
thinking,
that's going way back, but I mean, look, those movies are fun. Or at least they were fun when I watched them when I was young.
Yeah, but like I
like Van Helsing as well.
Oh
Speaking
my god,
of crap
I love
movies,
Van Helsing.
Oh. That's fair. That is fair.
Not the Wolfman though.
I like
the bridge too far.
I didn't mind the Wolfman. Weirdly,
it's
pretty shit.
What's wrong
pretty
with
shit.
You? You don't like Underworld, but you like the Wolf. You're weird.
I don't know. Do you like Van Helsing?
I never saw Van Helsing actually.
Do you know what? It's well worth a go back because it's what? It's a Hugh Jackman.
It's Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
And Kate Beckinsale actually.
I think it got its own PS2 game at the time. Anyway.
I vaguely remember that.
Is this always what the news section is? I think it
I've had like 3 coffees. I'm very fucking pingy at the minute. But my hot take basically was, and it's not even that hot take, they should have got a female director to direct a female centric spin-off. That's just.
I don't know if that's a hot take.
It's not that hot of a take. It's lukewarm.
I don't even know if it's a take. It's an opinion, but it's not
opinion.
I was hoping for like a crazy prediction.
Oh,
can you make one anyway?
Oh yeah, I'll give you a crazy prediction. It's going to be shit. There's my crazy prediction. It's going to be shit. Look at fucking Len Wiseman's fucking filmography. Die Hard 4.0, muck. Total Recall remake, muck.
Underworld,
grand, but like that's like fucking saying Paul W.S. Anderson. He made Event Horizon 20 fucking years ago. Look at all the shit he's made since then. Can't keep fucking trading on that one good film that you did. You know what I mean? Fuck that. Like, and Len Wiseman is a hack. I'm sorry, he's a fucking hack. And like,
that's a hot take.
That is a hot take. And like, they could have got like, Catherine Bigelow. They could have got fucking Karen. She did Destroyer with Nicole Kidman. She did Jennifer's Body. Karen Suzama, I think is her name. I forget her. Karen, I can't fucking remember her name now.
You're not going to get help from me. The fact that I almost certainly know it secretly.
You do know it. You do, like, they could have got Mimi Leder. They could have got fucking Michelle McLaren. They could have got fucking Catherine Bigelow if she did.
This is a good chance to... you have a Catherine Bigelow t-shirt.
I do. I'm not.
Are you wearing it?
I'm not wearing it, am I?
It's actually a really good initiative. I haven't heard it before. Maybe everybody else knows
it. I love
how
you had to check what shirt you're wearing. Yeah. Like, I don't remember what I put on this morning. That was years ago.
It's true. Like, you just, like, the same with these film shows. Like, somebody, like, said it to me before. I was like, oh, I listened to the film show. And I was like, all right, yeah. And I was like, well, you were talking about that film. What was it? And I was like,
we talked about films on the film show.
Yeah. I never remember.
That's like talking about entertainment on entertainment.ie.
How many is that now?
Five.
That's five. Nice. We need one more and then we're good to go.
Okay. I think you should up it to 15.
Oh, no.
How about we up it to 10? And they have to be as seamless ones as what I did.
Okay.
There.
Second piece of news here on entertainment.ie's film show. Joker has been raking it in, except turned the rake thing into some kind of clown pun. Has been
sideshow Bob.
Clowning to the box office,
laughing its way to the top.
There we go.
Yay!
That'll do.
Nice. that'll
money. The movie's made money. People are going to see it, and it's as controversial as ever.
Yeah, 95.3 million, which broke that was 95.3 million. That was the U.S. box office. That broke the record previously held by Venom, which had 80 million.
For what?
For the highest opening weekend for an October release.
Oh.
Which is crazy because that was like quite recent.
That was last year.
And then we had It Chapter 2 broke the record last month for the September box office opening.
I was talking about this
so
when it
funny,
happened.
Yeah.
I'm consistent. Like, are people just going to the... Is there just more population on the planet? What's
the thing
going
is,
on?
Like, no one went to the movies over the summer. And now everyone's like, let's head back to the cinema.
That is
you
true.
Know? But it's a good thing. I mean, I always like to see movies do well, so I'm happy. I think it's interesting as well that Joker has ended up like appealing so broadly that everyone is going to see it.
Is that marketing?
I think everyone's talking about it.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Everyone wants to see, no one wants to be left out. So everyone's going to see the film that everyone's talking about so they can have an opinion.
Yeah, it's rare that you have such a controversial film. Like such a, you know, we talked about it a lot last week in terms of being what's the word?
Provocative.
Provocative. That's exactly what I was thinking.
No, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, the only funny thing about it is I was talking to some friends over the weekend who didn't want to see it because they thought it was a horror movie. So I don't know if that's the way it's being marketed or talked about, but it's not really a horror at all.
No.
So it's funny that some people seem to think that. I don't know if it's that the posters look like he's some kind of creepy. I mean, he is a creepy killer.
Yeah,
ultimately, that's the only thing about it. And it is like frightening in its reality as opposed to, you know, as a kind of, you know, horror make-believe kind of thing. I thought that was kind of a funny take on
it.
You know?
I think so much of it is the kind of being able to dissect it as well, because I've had so many people reach out to me about last week's podcast and mates who we've then had back and forth WhatsApps with.
Yeah.
And it always ends with, we should meet up and talk about this more.
Yes,
more.
Because there's actually, even like we had a good chat about it and I'm still like, I don't want to jump back in, but it's like, oh yeah, there is lots going on. I don't know.
Yeah, and like I was talking, actually funny you said it now, because I mentioned that thing you said last week about the thing that the first time you see Bruce, he's sliding down a pole, and that was a reference to Batman 66.
Yeah, did anyone else?
No, but like because I saw a tweet and it was like there was one picture, it had a picture of Heath Ledger sticking his head out the window in the dark night.
Okay.
And then the
cop
other
car
one,
or whatever.
Yeah, and then the other picture was not Heath Ledger, fucking Joaquin Phoenix in the back of a police car being driven
away.
And they're like, ooh, it's visual symmetry. It's too fucking, like,
a man in a car.
It's a man in a car. Like, get it, grip. It's a man in a fucking car. Okay, fine, they're both in a
I would have liked to have seen a couple of nods to Heath Ledger. Maybe someone has dug out some legitimate ones.
I think it's that thing of,
it's
like,
too recent.
Not that it's too recent, but I think it's a case of people are seeing things that aren't there. They're ascribing, ooh, that's a reference to, you know, you know, like, that, no, it isn't.
I've seen a lot of people like ranking Jokers and see, I think it's a very different take on it.
It's a completely different
take. I think it's maybe one of the characters who surprisingly has actually been reinvented a lot more than others recently.
I mean, Batman is pretty much the same no matter what.
Yeah.
Realistically, like. I mean, okay, fine. Like, okay, he's not Adam West. But, like, generally speaking, like, since Michael Keaton's Batman, I feel like it's variations on the same note.
Yeah.
Whereas with Joker, it's, like, one minute you have fucking Mark Hamill's The Animated Series Joker, where he's very funny, but not clowning it up like Cesar Romero would in the 60s. Yeah. And then you have Heath Ledger, where he's basically a terrorist.
Yeah.
And then you have Hot Topic Joker, Jared Leto, poor bastard. And then you have...
Asha Joker,
to make it even more Irish specific. And then you've got Joaquin Phoenix, which is kind of like Rupert Pupkin, King of Comedy, Martin Scorsese-esque Joker.
Yeah.
It's
Joe, I will say, in terms of Batman being reinvented or anything, we're not going to see like a goofball Batman from Robert Pattinson. I would love to see one really similar in tone to Joker as a Batman story.
I
know that they're intending
horror.
To kind of take it more along maybe the detective aspect of it. It won't be, I'm hoping again it'll be low on special effects and that kind of thing, because that could really be a blueprint for DC.
I think so.
But they're just like stories. They kind of attempted that with Christopher Nolan, do you not think?
Yeah, that's
kind
that's
of
fair.
As dark as they were willing to go. Maybe they could go more dark, but I did feel like Christopher Nolan was trying to make it a kind of practically based Batman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's so fair, yeah. And they definitely felt like Nolan films.
Yeah,
which
that's the thing.
Like all three of them kind of have that vibe of this is his Batman or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what I want to see from it, but I suppose...
We're still fucking talking about it, though.
Yeah.
In the gas, like. It was too... Like, we devoted a lot of time to it last week, and here we are again, still fucking talking about
it.
Fuck this film, like.
We'll move on. Yeah, you're still... I read your other article on entertainment.ie.
Hey!
Sound the horn!
Yes! The ending one.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we can't discuss it, but people should go on to entertainment.ie, I suppose.
How many is that now?
I'm not telling you.
It's eight.
It is eight, yeah.
All right, that's the news. Up next, we've got movie reviews.
Movie reviews.
All right, where do you guys want to start? Will we hit? Now, we had a request in from a wise listener about The Farewell, which we justifiably did miss out on.
We did.
I think you're the only one who's seen it, Brian.
I did, yeah. And I put the review up on entertainment.ie about 2 weeks ago, so you can read that. But no,
are you giving out?
No, I loved it.
It's been a trailer in every movie I've seen the last month.
Yeah, no, it's a really, really sweet family dramedy. It stars Awkwafina. It's basically set in China. Her grandmother, or her nai-nai, as it's referred to, and this actually kind of ties into Abominable. Her nai-nai basically gets sick. Her family go back to China. And I've been to China, and it's a very...
Have you now?
I totally fucking... I didn't mean to... I said it, I was like...
It's a man who's been to China.
Let me tell you how well-traveled I am. I've been to China. But I have been to China, and I know that... Anyways... They are...
Which part of China are you just speaking?
What made you think
broadly?
You could say it a second time?
No, I don't know why I did. I don't even know where to... My point is
you've been to China.
I've been to China. Third time. And they are a very, very, very... I don't want to say secretive. It's not the right word.
Private?
Private, yeah. It's the kind of thing of like... So basically, the whole thing about The Farewell is that... the mother is very, very sick and the family aren't telling her about it. And they've basically organized this wedding in a rush to mask the fact that the family are all coming together because they want to see her one last time.
And Awkwafina is meant to be getting married.
No, not Awkwafina. Oh, okay. It's her first cousin is getting married to this Japanese girl and they've literally only been dating 3 months. And it's really, really funny because when the grandmother is sitting around with them all, she's like, okay, how long have you been dating? They're like 3 months. She was like, okay, right, we're not going to tell anybody about that. Yeah. So if anybody asks, saying you've been going over 2 years and all this kind of stuff, it's very, very funny. Like.
Yes.
But also I think what it does is that it plays with that kind of thing of like, you know, like, so often when it comes to families and stuff like that, there is an element of, like, little white lies, and you're lying for their benefit. You're not lying to hide your own awkwardness, and you're not lying for your own benefit. You're lying for their benefit. You're not telling them something, because to tell them the truth would cause unnecessary struggle that they don't need.
And it's like a kind of different generational thing.
Correct.
And stuff like that. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
I also see in the trailer, it's kind of an East versus West ideology thing where they say
exactly that. Yeah.
In the East, you're part of a bigger whole or something.
Correct. Exactly that. Yeah. Because the whole idea about it is that Awkwafina and her family left and went to America, and she's basically known nothing else but America, but she knows that she is Chinese and that she grew up there, and she left when she was 7 and da 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 da.
Yeah.
And her whole thing when she's in America is that, no, I would want to know. I don't want to carry the guilt of this. Mm. Whereas the family are like, no, our duty is to carry the guilt of this.
Oh.
So that she doesn't have to live with the knowledge that she's going to die. And it's very common. This is the point I was making about it was that when it was China, we got talking to a Chinese family, and like we were discussing this whole thing, and they mentioned
you discussed the movie with them.
No, not the movie. We were talking about like the whole idea of like, you know, how families are so fucking tightly knit in China. And they said, yeah, well, the whole point about it is that China is so huge, they only come together for the big events. And I said, oh, like funerals. And they're like, no, we don't. That's not really
that
done
doesn't
here.
Count.
That's not really right. done here. Like, we come together for like for weddings, for the happy things. We don't come together for the sad things. Oh. And I was like, oh, that's very odd. And I was like saying, because in Ireland, it's like a wake. An Irish wake is literally like
we revel in the grief. Yeah.
In fairness, but like in Ireland, like it's basically like a funeral is a party almost.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm speaking
broadly. No, I love
broadly,
it that way.
But
yeah,
you know what
no,
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It is that thing of like it's an ease up almost. Mm. You know. And they don't see it that way at all. They are almost kind of ashamed by death in a weird kind of way. I'm not ashamed, but like they don't treat it in the same way. And it's a very, very interesting exploration of it. And actually, when I was at the screening for The Farewell, there was a lot of Asian people at it.
Yeah.
And I was actually sat right next to an Asian girl, and she was fucking laughing her arse off at stuff that I was like, is that funny? Is that funny? And like, there was loads of Asian people laughing.
Right.
It was obviously very, very specific to Asian audiences.
And if you're an expat and
correct.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Very authentic. And then it made me think of like something like Brooklyn. The idea of like when you leave your home, your home country, you have to take what's important with you.
Yeah.
And that when you come home, there's an element of like, I want to stay here. This is familiar. I remember this. I want to be here. I don't want to go back to the life that I built. I want to stay here because I know this and I remember this.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da. But the fact is that you've been gone so long, and nostalgia is ultimately self-defeating. The idea of like, you can't go back to the past. You can't relive the memories of your childhood. They're gone. You have to keep moving forward. Like, and it's like that thing about another film I think of when I was thinking about The Farewell was Cinema Paradiso.
Okay.
The
yeah.
end of Cinema Paradiso when the projectionist dies, and before the kid leaves when he's a teenager, when he goes off, the projectionist tells him, he says, don't ever come back here. You know, don't give in to nostalgia.
Yeah.
You have to leave behind.
There's no significance to the location.
Correct.
Or yeah.
yeah. Like, you have to leave here. You can't come back. I never want to see you here again. You've got to keep moving forward. And that is a thing for expats, especially anyone who's moved a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good take on it. Yeah. Like the Irish in Oz or whatever.
Yeah. The Irish in Oz. And like, I know people like Dee, you're an immigrant. Like, you know, like, okay, fine. You left when you were 5. 6?
3.
Okay, so you've no memories. But
no memories.
No memories at all.
Well, I don't really know if I am, because like my parents are Irish. I just happen to be born in America.
Right. But you have no memories of New York at all?
I think I remember leaving.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. I'm sure I'm three. I know, yeah, but I'm okay. But my point is
life
that...
Life it could have been, D.
Life it could have been. She could have been in New York.
New York.
One boy got coming up. That's what they say. All right, I'm going to keep it moving.
You want a hot dog?
Did you give it 5?
I gave it 4.
Yeah.
I took the 1 off because I did feel that it kind of was... There was parts of it that I kind of felt it was giving over to sentimentality just a little bit too much.
Okay, yeah. Bit saccharine at the end.
A bit. But it's very good. It's very, very good. And if you get the chance to see it, it's still playing.
Watching it on an airplane.
No. Well, I mean, if you want. But
I think it might be on demand as well. I think. Already? I'd have to check it out.
I'm nearly certain it's still playing in the IFI and the Lighthouse, though. It's definitely worth a watch, though. Yeah. If you see it on wherever, it's definitely worth a watch.
Class. Cool. Okay, D, Gemini Man.
Yeah.
Will Smith versus The Fresh Prince.
I genuinely had to take notes for this, even though I saw it just last night, because it's that forgettable.
No! I was hoping for this.
Yeah, I bought into all the de-aging. I don't know why I did. Even hearing it now, what a foolish fool I am.
But I mean, I think that the de-aging thing is obviously going to be the biggest kind of, you know, selling factor for it, you know, because people want to see current Will Smith face off, you know,
actually, give
Prince
us
of Bel-Air, Will Smith. So Will Smith plays Will Smith.
Will Smith and Will Smith.
No, his character's name is Henry or something. But he plays this.
I can see it in your nose, Henry.
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 Don't give a shit about
it's
this.
Such
it's
a
fantastic.
Conventional. It's not, look, it's not the worst movie I've seen this year. But it's not great. So essentially he plays this elite assassin who's just about to retire. I know, we're already in very conventional action movie territory here. But then
you love John Wick.
Keep going.
But hang on, that's not a conventional action movie. Just saying.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway. And then his dog is killed. No, I'm kidding. His best friend is killed, though, just after he's found out from the best friend that the last job he did before retirement had some kind of dodgy connections, and he was supposed to be in charge of this thing, but he was actually more innocent than that. So then Will Smith is forced to go on the run because everybody is out to kill him, and he ends up dragging along Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character, who's meant to be surveying him, but then they're after her too because she was surveying him, blah 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 blah. And they make friends with he's already friends with Benedict Wong's character, and so the three of them are on a kind of globe-trotting adventure together, but at some point young Will Smith is after older Will Smith. So essentially the young one is related to this project called Gemini, which is also like this group of assassins, but basically they're super dodgy and do stuff like disappearing people, and they're totally illegal, even though what Will Smith
Those
is doing
baddies.
Is kind of illegal anyway.
No.
It's like more illegal, if you get what I mean.
Will Smith's the good guy.
But Clive Owen had been trying to recruit Henry into this program, and Henry said no. But little did he know, that they actually stole his DNA and made a clone of him. And that is the one who is after him now.
And is that the idea that, like, we need to create a super soldier and young Will Smith was perfect, and so why don't we just
Okay, yeah. That is exactly it.
It's Metal Gear Solid.
You could have written this movie, Owen.
Yeah, I think I just have.
But no, that's Metal Gear Solid. That's the plot of Metal Gear Solid.
That's the plot of Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah. And I mean, there's elements of that. There's a lot of Terminator references in this between a motorcycle chase, some certain like movie sequences. There's actually this bit at the end where there's a guy who's on fire and he's kind of doing this, like melting into the fire thing, and I'm like, that's so Terminator 2, it's ridiculous. And
I never want to hear that noise again.
Yeah, what the fuck was that?
But isn't that the noise that your man makes when he's melting? Totally
like a pterodactyl.
Maybe it's because Jurassic Park is fresh in my head.
It's fresh in my head too, yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, so in terms of special effects, like I said before, I think that what everyone wants to see is current Will Smith versus young Will Smith. And I mean, sometimes it works so, so well, especially when young Will Smith is walking around. But there are certain bits that look so CGI. Like I watched
Uncanny
this
Valley kind of crack.
Yeah, exactly. No. Like there were some... I was watching this with a full audience and there were just some shots. I don't know if it was the way he was pouting, because I think it's always the way with when you're kind of de-aging character, de-aging actors. I think it's particularly around the eyes and the mouth that there are issues.
That's where you'd notice. Okay,
exactly. Yeah. But there were certain bits where, for want of a better word, he was basically pouting and then he'd look kind of weird or off or something
for
like that.
For a nanosecond or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, not even a nanosecond, like for an entire shot. And there were people who were laughing because it was just kind of weird looking. You know, and it also, well, I don't know if this helped. In some ways it helped. So I also watched it on
high frame rate, that thing.
Yeah, the 3DX high frame rate. Yeah. Now, for the action sequences, I thought it looked quite cool. But then for the CGI, it could be like really uncomplimentary looking sometimes. It looked like kind of cheap.
The whole point of the high frame rate shooting and presenting was to help with this kind of Uncanny Valley thing where, because they're both in such a high frame rate, you're more likely to believe it?
No, I don't think so. Because like, if you think about it, if you go for like the kind of natural frame rate, then everything is kind of smoothed out rather than you notice every single tiny little detail. Yeah. So I'd actually think that the lower, like kind of natural frame rate.
I haven't heard of
a
high frame rate film since The Hobbit.
Yeah.
And that was, I didn't know what to expect. And
that movie gave me a headache.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
and I hate high frame rate.
Same.
Yeah.
It's you know when, like, when you watch an old TV on a TV show on a HDTV and you're like, this is a little bit too real and I'm more aware that these lads are on a set.
Mm. Yeah.
It's exactly that. It's like watching, like, something through a VCR or something. I don't know.
I once saw The Terminator, actually, on, like, HDTV. So it had, like, that higher frame rate and stuff. And I do think that it works for action movies to an extent.
Sure, okay, yeah.
But, like I said, in this case, for this, I think it works for practical effects. But for CGI, I actually think that it does more harm than good.
Yeah. But this is Ang Lee, again. He's meant to be this revolutionary forward thinker.
I know, but if you think about it, like, what amazing thing has Ang Lee done recently? I mean, it's like when you think back to like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon and Sense and Sensibility, like that stuff was great, but it was years ago.
Yeah.
Lost Caution, though, that was meant to be pretty good, wasn't it?
I saw that.
You guys weren't enamored with Life of Pi?
I liked it, but I wasn't in love.
I wasn't blown away by it,
I felt like as I was watching it, I was like, oh, I see exactly why this would have worked as a book, because like kind of in terms of your imagination could have made it something big.
Something,
Whereas when you see it on the big screen, it's kind of someone else like forcing their vision and you feel like your own imagination could have been more expansive, you know?
That's a really good take. We're full of hot takes.
That's my Life of Pi take.
And entertainment.ie is the film show.
Exactly.
That wasn't, no, I mean, hang on. Don't
mark
that. That doesn't count.
Put a half a mark.
Go, fuck it, give him a mark.
Okay, I'm giving it, no, I'll give a half a mark.
Entertainment.ie, you don't have to count that one.
Okay, that's a full mark.
Yay!
Okay, we've done it.
We hit 10.
We've hit 10.
Yay!
We've got a few more.
But yeah, I don't really know what more there is to say about this.
Could you recommend it
to
anyone?
One thing I will say for it is Will Smith. He is such a good actor. I mean, I don't really think anyone could have pulled this off. Yeah, I mean, in terms of, because I suppose the main task that he had in this movie, besides like the action stuff and the stunt stuff, and I mean, you know, he's no Tom Cruise doing all his own stuff and all that. But I mean, like the way he plays both his older self, who's kind of more like wise and haggard and experienced and all this, versus his younger self, who's very kind of naive and just full of this anger and desire for like violence and determination to prove himself. And that's obviously something that he had to access. And I suppose as well, he also had to kind of integrate this kind of, you know, young Will Smith as in a reference back to younger Will Smith roles that he's played in.
Exactly,
and I thought that he actually did that quite effectively. And it reminded me as well about how Will Smith, like we've talked before on the show about, there are just some stars that just have that screen presence.
Yeah, sure,
and he has that. He is just kind of naturally charismatic. Yeah. People just want to go see him. I mean, you look at like the recent Aladdin, and for everyone saying like, oh, he's never going to beat like Robin Williams, like people went in like flocks to go see that movie. And I think that a lot of it was
the
way that he sold it. He didn't try to do a Robin Williams. He just did a Will Smith doing the genie, you know?
Yeah, fair.
And I'd actually think that he was better in this, maybe because it was a more challenging role, like I said, because he had that duality to play that he was in Aladdin.
I know that he said that he couldn't have played the younger role until recently. He said, now that I'm 50, I finally feel ready to look back and try and take some of those behaviors of what a young man is.
Because it does kind of touch on, I mean, I might be way overreading into this, but I thought it did kind of like act as a kind of commentary on like an angry, young, fatherless African-American community. Now, that might be me giving it way too much credit, but I mean, knowing Will Smith and kind of, you know, the expansiveness of like his, you know, filmography and everything, like I feel like he could have been leaning into that. Like I give him credence for doing that rather than say it was down to the script.
It's funny you say that. Do you remember, right? And I know I kind of said earlier, oh, is he a good actor? No, he actually is, because there was an episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air when his
clip from this. Yeah. Oh, that was devastating.
Makes me cry easier than YouTubing that clip.
Yeah.
That is so good. He finally meets his real dad.
He finally meets his real dad. For people who don't know, you should look it up. It's Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
And I haven't seen the show, and I love that clip.
And basically what it is Will's father isn't really kind of...
He's a deadbeat or whatever.
He's a bit of a deadbeat, yeah. And he's not in his life all that much. And he comes back into his life. And the whole episode is him basically trying to reconnect with his dad. And he's really happy to see him again and all this kind of stuff. And But the dad keeps letting him down, letting him down. And the final scene of the episode is when
The dad's trying to sneak out of the house.
And he's like, look, listen, I'm going. And
maybe catch you again sometime.
Catch you again next time. And, you know, don't worry about it. I'll be back. And Will Smith's character breaks down. Like, he's just all like, you know, like, I'm going to be a better dad than him. And
Uncle Banks.
Yeah, like, isn't like, you know, I don't worry about it. I've been looking after myself for a year. It's such a fucking good scene. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And Uncle Phil is just like, look, you're allowed to feel angry about this. And then he's like, how come? And then, like,
he's a better role model.
Yeah. And it ends with, like, how come he doesn't want me? Like, and it's, you're like,
he's phenomenal. He's really good in Pursuit of Happiness and stuff as well. You didn't like it?
I saw Pursuit of Happiness and I thought it was just so fucking like...
too saccharine?
Yeah. here's my Oscar role. Here's my Oscar. It was so... Yeah.
Didn't he win an Oscar for Ali or something?
No, he should have won for Ali.
Oh, he didn't win it for
Ali. He didn't win for Ali. Okay.
In
Ali,
he been nominated?
He was nominated and he should have won. Ali is... is probably one of the best sports biopic movies ever.
I've never seen it.
Wow, it's so fucking good.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's so good. No and he's way. Brilliant in it. And again, another thing if you want to YouTube it, is him meeting the real Muhammad Ali. When he was in training for Ali. And Ali gets in the ring with him and he goes, I'm going to beat you, sucker.
Yeah, such a big character.
He's still in character, like, and you can see the two of them, like, he's doing the...
That is so good.
So cool.
So yeah, forget what I said earlier. Will Smith is a fucking great actor.
Is it worth going just for him?
I'd say just to remind you of like
how good he can be.
I miss him in those massive action roles as well.
That's the thing. I mean, as an action thriller, it's fairly by the numbers. There's nothing particularly kind of creative about it.
Aside
from the de-aging thing, I suppose. But I mean, is it that creative when you think of how many movies are doing it now? But it is from the perspective of, like I said, the kind of performances that it brings out of
him. And how do you rank it next to something like Jason Bourne?
Well, not the new one. No, but it did also remind me of the Bourne trilogy because it has that kind of globe-trotting aspect. Mm. The fact that he's like on the run and everything. There are definitely hints of Bourne in there as well. It's not as good as Bourne.
I'd probably give this a punt, you know? I'd probably give a go.
Go check it out. This is the thing, yeah. Because
I'm glad
I've been let down, but I think there's a chance people will just go to it anyway.
Yeah.
That's why I'm really interested to see how it'll do because... in terms of if it's just kind of a romp, a kind of action thriller, you know, average kind of movie you want to see. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what is the star power of Will Smith. Will it carry like beyond Aladdin? Because Aladdin obviously had going for it that it was a family movie and, you know, you'd have parents bringing their kids to it and everything. Like, does Will Smith have it enough that people will go and see this movie?
Presumably.
Curious to see how it does.
Yeah.
You know?
A real romp.
Real romp.
Okay, we've got Abominable. Is this you again, Dave?
I haven't seen it.
This is me.
Oh, I really wish I'd seen it. Usually I'm the one who's seeing the family kind of animation movies.
Film.
But Brian grabbed it out from under me.
I didn't grab it out from under you. I didn't.
Brian.
You weren't here.
I was.
Were you?
Yeah, but it's fine. Don't worry. He also has an interview with the director, which he also snatched away.
I tell you, you probably would have been better actually talking to him.
Well, then why?
In future, when it's animated
movies, just give it to me.
I'm not a cynic. I know you're not a cynic. I'm not a cynic either.
First question about Abominable. Where do you get off, Brian?
Who your eyes went very like Robert De Niro there, you know? They went,
they're still there.
Just kind of like,
yeah,
kinda,
I'm, kinda, I, it's, where, I'm still seeing it.
Where do you get these shoes? These shoes?
I love how visual based this.
And there's like this joke. Guys, not, this guys, joke isn't landing.
Guys, do your own De Niro thing at home.
I wish you could see their faces right now. They're both trying to like out De Niro like, each other with their faces. I kind of wish I could take
these
a picture.
These shoes?
Yours is good. Hmm?
Hang on, do your picture.
Okay, we're going to take a picture. God, okay, this is so
mid audio.
This is riveting audio.
Nice. We're going to tweet it. So keep an eye on at the film show on Twitter.
Actually, yeah, maybe it's a good decent promotional blog, exercise. Yeah. All right, hit us with a review.
No, this is actually decent. This is actually very, very decent. I actually like this a lot. It reminded me. And I think it was intentional. It reminded me of How to Train Your Dragon.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yes.
Like as a comparison point. Correct. That's a great movie.
Yeah, that's a great movie. Yeah, really, really good. And it's the same company as DreamWorks.
Yeah.
And the guy who designed the creature Abominable also designed Toothless.
Yeah, his name's Toothless.
Is that the Black Dragon?
The Black Dragon from How to Train Your Dragon. He designed the same character. So there is a similarity there. And I think that's intentional. I think they're
aesthetic,
kind of,
like, yeah,
they're going for that aesthetic. And it works. Story is this Yeti escapes from a lab in Shanghai, hides out in a roof garden.
Have you been to Shanghai, Brian?
No, actually, I haven't. But I have been to Changchun, and I have been to Beijing, and I have been to Hong Kong. So fuck you, Deirdre. Anyways,
does this have a Chinese theme to it as well?
Yeah, it does actually. Weirdly,
how does that work? I didn't know there was any kind of Yeti lore.
No, well, like I mean, oh god, this is gonna get political now. It's in Tibet.
Here we go.
Tibet is in the Himalayas. The Himalayas, possibly China. Whole thing.
So it's a Tibetan story, and.
Yes, I suppose it is.
I think we're allowed to take a stand. I don't think we have to watch out for
I'm just observing Pandora's boxes that's being opened wider and wider and seeing what emerges.
I am very aware of the fact that like South Park got banned out of China. Yeah, you ever heard about this?
Yeah, just this week.
Yeah, just this week, yeah.
For having free Tibet stuff on it.
Not well, yeah, kind of. Like they basically made a load of fun of China and the fact that they're like very, very sensitive about people making fun of them.
Well, I think we've had a good review of The Farewell, which is...
No, but like this is Chinese government.
The state.
Like, Chinese state censorship. Like.
And the South Park creators issued this very sarcastic apology, which is basically F you.
Wow.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Let's check this out. So where are you going to dip your toes?
Well, no, I mean, like, there's none of that in this at all. Like,
it's an animated movie.
It's an animated kids movie. Like, what? Like,
Brian,
and
come
it's
off
like,
it.
I like
can dish the real dirt.
I'm not like I'm really
what
not.
Secret weapons is the Yeti
what's the state up to
it is a vehicle of state propaganda no well it is no right be serious no it is no it's basically like How to Train Your Yeti. That's basically what this
okay,
is
right.
Same beat, same story, same everything. Chloe Bennett plays this young girl called Yi. She lives in Shanghai with her mother and her nai-nai. Same thing from The Farewell.
Aww.
See what I did there? Yeah.
Do they
support
the political status quo?
Anyways. what? But yeah, no. So, what was I saying? Yeah, so the Yeti breaks out of this laboratory in Shanghai, hides out in Yi's roof garden. Yi basically wants to go on this trip across China because her father also did the same. Her father has died.
No.
And then she basically figures out that the Yeti is from the Himalayas, from Everest. She calls the Yeti Everest and says, right, I'm going to bring him back to the Himalayas.
Oh.
This evil, wealthy industrialist, voiced by Eddie Izzard, is trying to get the Yeti back. And he is very, very, very influenced by Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. I'm being deadly serious because he's got like a furry vest. And he's got like this
the gorilla vest.
Oh my god!
Yeah, no, he's got it. He's got like he's wearing this like furry vest, and he's like small and he's angry.
But you mean Eddie Izzard or the film?
The character was like, oh, like that's Mr. Burns. That's you've just copied Mr. Burns.
Okay, yeah.
And
I'd watch that.
Yeah,
That's how they get the millennials in.
Maybe, yeah. And yeah, so that's it. So he's basically trying to get the Yeti back because he wants to. keep it because he's a collector of rare animals and stuff. And Yi and her next door neighbor and her cousin are on this cross China journey to get Everest back to the Himalayas.
And out of China and into Tibet.
Yeah. Okay. Please don't hurt me, China. And yeah, and that's it. And it's basically that. It's that they go on the journey and they have to get him back to the Himalayas. And it's the animation of it is beautiful. Like very much like How to Train a Dragon. It's very, very like smoothly animated and the scenery is gorgeous on it. It's like basically like a postcard of China. It looks great. The story, like if you've seen E.T., if you've seen Bumblebee, if you've seen literally any of these kind of 80s and 90s stories of, I just want to bring my friend back. That's this story. Like you have seen this film 100 times, but I think the familiarity of it works because the locales are, you don't really see them on mainstream movies. Like China yeah. doesn't really have that much of a presence over here in a cinematic pop culture terms. And I really liked it. I really, really liked it. Eddie Izzard was very good in it. Chloe Bennett was very good in it. It looked great. I liked it.
Where'd you rank it on animations you've seen?
This year?
Yeah.
You haven't seen
better than Playmobil.
I feel like I've
worse
seen
than Lego
more.
Movie
probably
2.
See, yeah, yeah. Yeah, D's seen way more than me. Toy Story was this year, wasn't
it? Toy Story 4, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I liked that. I liked that a lot. Have you seen
Big Hero 6?
I've seen Big Hero 6. I really love Big Hero 6.
Very different.
Different, yeah, I know. Totally different to Big Hero 6. Like, because Big Hero 6 was basically like a fucking anime.
San Francisco, Tokyo, or Japanese.
San Francisco.
Ah, yeah.
San Francisco.
I can never say it right.
And Big Hero 6 was more kind of like taking its leaf out of anime, I felt.
Yeah,
like.
Of course.
Whereas this is not.
Is it really bad that for the last 5 minutes I've just heard Mr. Burns see my vest in my head? Like ever since you mentioned
they
it,
do.
I can't
see
stop
my
hearing.
Vest.
See my vest made from real gorilla these
loafers, former
sweater,
chauffeurs.
No. See this sweater. There's no better.
made from real Irish setter.
Yeah.
Grizzly bear.
No. See this hat. 'Twas my cat. I obviously know this.
Yeah. No. Wait. You can't. 'Twas my cat.
Eat my evening wear vampire bat. And then some.
See these loafers, former chauffeurs. Former gophers. It was
like,
that or kill my chauffeurs.
No, it's like
skin
my loafers, former gophers. It was that skin my chauffeurs. But a
greyhound for a tuxedo would be best. So let's prepare these dogs. Kill two for matching claws.
See my vest. See my vest. See my vest.
I really like the vest.
I got that.
I usually don't like their musical renditions, but I rather enjoyed that, guys. Thank you.
Brilliant. There you go. Pretty good. A stars out of 5?
4.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good.
I thought you meant for the rendition because I was like, that was not a 4.
I'm giving myself 4 out of 5. I thought it was fantastic.
Did I ask you to bring the knife down on Gemini Man?
Oh, God.
Too early?
Have you written the
Yeah, come back to me. I'm writing it tomorrow.
You're in between,
it feels like a 2.5.
Yeah, maybe 2.
Okay, we're going to end on another Irish production. We need a bell for that, actually, because it's a worthy...
Maybe just do that.
I'll just do that every single time.
Or even do like fucking, what do you call it? Put them under pressure. Horse lips.
Okay.
We'll do that.
Bump along the way. Brona Gallagher, she's
great.
Back.
This is a lovely movie. It is so, so sweet. I can't wait for you to see it, Brian, because we'll be reviewing it on The Last Word.
What's the ruddy plot?
It's basically about a woman in her, is she in her 30s or, no, she should be in her 40s. Yeah, she must be in her 40s. Or 50s?
What are you looking at me for? I don't fucking know.
I can't remember what age she
is. Let's say 40s.
Yeah, we'll say that. Played by Brona Gallagher. And she has one daughter who is a teenager. And she was basically told it was a, I think an ectopic pregnancy.
Okay.
So she was told that basically she wouldn't be able to have children. So on the night of her birthday, she has this one night stand with a young fella. Obviously doesn't use protection because she thinks she can't get pregnant. But then she is pregnant. And immediately she just thinks, okay, I'll have the baby, even though it makes her life way complicated and her teenage daughter is obviously not happy about it at all, because now she's become a bit of a laughingstock in school and she's already kind of being bullied in school as it is. So it's a phenomenal film. Brona Gallagher is just brilliant in it. She is just so funny and friendly and likable. She has that charisma we were talking about. Lola Pettigrew.
What have we last seen her in, Brona?
Well, she's just been in so many
The Phantom
things
Menace.
Over the years.
I mean, like she was, I mean, I know she did a lot of music. She was doing music for ages. She was doing like a lot of jazz stuff.
People know her best from The Commitments still.
Commitments, maybe? I guess. I mean, Pulp Fiction. Phantom Menace.
The last one I saw her in was Grabbers. She was great in that as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wasn't she? She had like a bit part in Sherlock Holmes as well, which I thought was very funny.
Yeah, she was like a palm reader.
She was a palm reader.
Yeah.
She's very
in
funny.
The Downey Jr. one?
The Downey Jr.
No
one.
Way.
Yeah, she's really funny in it. Like, and she's all like, "Raise your palm, sir." And then she's all like reading. And then, like, it's a really good scene. And like her, the banter that she has with Downey Jr. is very, very
she's
funny.
She's brilliant.
She's great. She's really great.
But it's a really, like, it's so funny and then so sweet. It's a really good script. You've got like these great one-liners. I'm obviously not going to, it's set in Northern Ireland. I'm not going to attempt a Northern Irish accent, guys. It's just not happening. But one of the lines is like,
nobody asked you to.
I'm just,
you're in a bigger state than Texas. She calls her daughter.
That's pretty decent,
she calls.
Was that
her,
your accent?
No, that's just me.
That's
with
a good one-liner though. I like that.
It's a good one. Yeah,
Texas,
yeah. She calls her daughter little bitch at one point, which I thought was great. At one point, her daughter asks her to describe what the baby feels like inside her, and she says it's like a wee butterfly, which I thought was really sweet. So they're lovely. Like, there's just lovely kind of dialogue and back and forth in that. And I forget the actress that plays her, Brona Gallagher's character. This is her best friend, but they have some like great funny conversations about babies' names and being horny and masturbation and all of this stuff. It's just like really, really funny. And they're just like really real characters that you can get on board with immediately. Like I said, the performances between Brona Gallagher and Lola Pettigrew, who plays her daughter, they really do carry the film. There's like something really sweet about it. And I think that it's one of those ones. It reminded me a bit of Lady Bird in that it's a really good one for mums and daughters to go to together, for them to get like a really good understanding of each other, because even though it's called A Bump Along the Way, and you assume obviously that
it's
means
a big
baby, the baby
flick,
it's more about the bumps along the way of life, really, because as well as following, you know, her story and the complications and kind of her being like judged by the town and the gossip that they're saying and everything, and even having to like go to
where is
the dad
town? Is it it's outside of Belfast or?
Ooh, I forget. That's really bad.
We have to keep geography out of
Northern Ireland. And it'd be worse if I said the wrong county, in fairness, wouldn't it? And then she has to go to the young dad and obviously tell him that, you know, he's about to have a kid, and he's kind of running off being like, I want nothing to do with this, and you said you couldn't get pregnant, and it's probably not even my kid and all of that.
Did you recognize any others in the cast either?
Not off the top of my head. I think they're most kind of up and coming. And I mean, you had a lot of kind of young actors in there as well, because like I said, aside from following Brona Gallagher's story, you're also following Lola's. Her character's name is, I forget it off the top of my head, but it's like a kind of weird name that she has to live with. But she's essentially being bullied.
Why is she being bullied?
Just generally. Kids are
assholes.
And at one point she does kind of get in with the popular crowd, and then she starts to abandon her best friend a bit as a result. But then she has that kind of, you know, one night where she gets drunk and messes it all up, and then they want nothing to do with her, and she's just left really kind of isolated and stuff. And you really, really do feel for her, and how difficult it is obviously to address bullying in schools, because what can you do? Do you take them out and will that make everything worse for the kid? But it actually kind of negotiates through like what happens with her in a really kind of good way, a way that made a lot of sense. It was just like a really heartwarming movie, you know, that you can kind of recommend to anyone to see. Like I said, it's mostly for mums and daughters, I think.
Once you say that Lady Bird kind of allegory, I'm like, I get it.
I see that. Yeah.
And is it a screen? Is it called Screen Northern Ireland? Northern Irish Film Board?
Ireland's.
Is it a
Screen?
Joint kind of
venture? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But and actually, Brona Gallagher's sister, Louise Gallagher, is a producer on it. And it's female directed. Women know women, guys, as Brian was saying earlier.
It's true. No, it is really true. Like,
women and wise men.
Well, no, but that's... I that is... Like, you look at Ladybird, like, I don't think a dude could have got that kind of, like...
No.
Exactly.
That awareness.
Gotten to that route. Yeah.
Gotten to that route and got.
But the fact that we even have to think about it shows how trailblazing something like that is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact that we're not there now.
Not at all. Yeah. Not
women
at all.
Directing women's stories or whatever.
And I mean, the likes of, like, Patty Jenkins have proven that it's not just, like, drama
Patty
and emotional stories.
Jenkins. She
but,
could
like,
do the fucking John Wick.
She definitely
Jesus
could. But, like, in terms of, like...
Why'd they take it off?
But, like, in terms of directing action, because I think that is particularly, you know, a stereotype as they can't.
Yeah,
that's action, bullshit. You know? That is bullshit. Look, exactly. Look at fucking Wonder Woman, that fucking Destroyer film. That there's a great heist scene. There's a great bank heist scene. Why can't I think of your one's fucking name?
What's the movie?
Destroyer, it's called, and we'll Nicole Kidman was in it, and the director's name is Karen. It's going to drive me mad.
Who directed Lucy, by the way?
That was Luc Besson.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, sorry. It was. I saw it at the weekend.
It's kind of muck, isn't it?
It's
It's okay, muck. But it's entertaining muck.
Because the whole time I wanted to bring up Lucy as something that is clearly a very masculine film.
Yes. Done from the male
gaze. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she gets a text at the end.
Who directed it? What was your one's name?
Karen Kusama.
That's it.
Oh yeah.
So what else has she done?
She did Jennifer's Body and she did
The Invitation.
Ah.
Yeah.
Aeon Flux.
Yeah. That basically tanked her career. Fucking tanked her from doing any kind of big budget films. But Destroyer is a cracking film. Destroyer is a really, really good film.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it.
That was her kind of big comeback. Did it come out at the same time as Monster?
Destroyer?
Yeah.
Destroyer was last year.
It was last year.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I'm just thinking of Monster.
No, yeah, no. This is like nearly like... Destroyer is basically like, what if... what if Heat was directed by, you know, the True Detective people? Mm. How would that look?
Wow.
Yeah, it has the same kind of vibe. It's like a really gritty version of Heat, but with a slower pace and kind of smaller stakes. But it's really good.
Check that out.
I really enjoy it.
It's rare I actually write them down anymore. I'm going to check out Destroyer.
Yeah.
By the way, Monster was Patty Jenkins. Maybe that's what you're
thinking.
Oh, okay.
Right. Where you're getting confused.
Exactly.
I can see how you get that tangled.
Entertainment.ie.
We had 10. We don't need 11.
I was just deflecting. That's the show, I believe, guys. We've had... Okay, so... We're going to do one last shout out for the big, big movie because we are going to dedicate some time to the RTE classic series that was the weekly big, big movie.
I need to check in and actually see if they're still doing it. I think they still do it.
We need to get onto the press office because
we probably should.
We've amassed from lovely listeners a list of films.
Yes, we did.
That people have seen a million times thanks to the big, big movie. And there are certain movies that are ingrained in the Irish psyche.
Yes.
Thanks to the big, big movie.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just a shout out to tweet us at The Film Show. I don't think we'll even get to it next week because we've got a load of reviews.
Yeah. Jeez,
what have we got teed up, you guys?
Oh my gosh. So
Zombieland Double Tap. We'll also have an interview with Woody Harrelson and Jesse Eisenberg
Unreal.
On next week's show.
Oh, yeah. Actually, we're going to have to figure out because Maleficent, Mistress of Evil is also out next week. And
oh, shit.
I have a couple of interviews for that.
Oh.
So we'll figure out. Some might go next week and some might go
the
week
after. No, we can
mash
them up.
No, we're going to put them all in one. No, yeah, you're right. We'll figure it out. We'll space it. Yeah. We'll figure out something.
So we'll review Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, I guess, or else just include the reviews. We'll figure it out as we go. But interview-wise, we've got Chiwetel Ejiofor. We have Ed Skrein. Ed Skrein?
You were talking to
him,
dude.
Sam Riley.
Okay.
Well, I just called him Ed because we're on a first-name basis now because we're best friends forever.
Sam Riley reprising his role as the Crow Lad.
Yeah.
I talked to him
about Control and he let me be a fangirl. It was great.
I love Control.
That's why I love Sam Riley.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Brighton Rock, I actually thought he was really good in. Yeah, weird film, but I liked him in it.
Did you like? Yeah, no, but Control. Oh my God.
Radio.
And he was in Byzantium with Saoirse Ronan and Gemma Arterton. So
never
he has
saw
a couple
that.
Of
the,
Irish
the
connections.
The Wicklow,
there.
That was shot in Dublin or something.
Oh, it was such a. And I remember Brian and I talking about this at the time. It would have been so good if they'd had like a decent budget. You know that they could have made something lacking. Bigger yeah. and expansive Byzantium. Out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember we were talking about this at the time. It's an okay movie, but you just felt like it could have been more. Like it could have been up there with Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah,
right.
You know,
yeah,
and you could tell, had that potential.
Yeah, and you could totally tell that like he has it in Neil Jordan has it in him to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't get the fucking budget for Byzantium, like, and he really had to like struggle his way through it. Byzantium is a decent film.
Yeah.
I remember being really taken by it.
I remember being really hyped for it as an Irish mm-hmm. production.
Yeah.
And then not seeing it.
And then I remember at the IFTAs. I remember at the fucking IFTAs.
Were you at the IFTAs?
No.
I actually was. I was working at them that year.
And Neil Jordan stood up on the stage and was like, "Okay, everybody, go pirate Byzantium. Bye."
He was in the Jacks when they were giving his award.
Right, I remember, yeah.
I don't know if they edited it for TV, but he actually wasn't in the room when they gave his
Neil.
Award. But it happened to him when he won the Oscar as well. There's just something about him, like, I don't know.
Just get that man a porta potty.
Carry around a dialysis bag with you, Neil Jordan.
This has been the Film Show. Entertainment.ie's flagship movie podcast. Goodbye, entertainment.ie.
That's all there is to it. That's all there is to it.